This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Not very much to talk about this week. The Senate votes on the impeachment of the President of the United States after he gave a State of the Union speech. Iowa voters caucused in the first actual voting in the 2020 presidential election, and they screwed up the counting big time. Chuck Coughlin is here, and we'll try to figure out if there's something in this that we can talk about.
You know, there's just so little drama. I was thinking, we need to go to, like, maybe see a film. Oh, and I'm like, or a play or some kind of high drama. And I'm like, oh, we saw all that this week.
Yeah. Starting with the impeachment of the President of the United States. The biggest surprise, I think, at the we knew that it was going to be a 90-some-odd percent partisan vote.
Right.
In the high 90s.
Right.
Interesting, at the end, there was a single defection, no defection from the Democrats, and the big one took me out of nowhere, was Mitt Romney.
Yeah, I believe that could happen all along, because he is probably the one sitting U.S. Republican senator who is, this isn't a career capstone achievement for him. His Senate seat was an afterthought on his career.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really, and he's there serving in a capacity, a constituency that he solidly represents, the state of Utah, his Mormon faith. And so he, and his dad has a lineage, his family has political lineage. A lot of people know that. My mother worked on his campaign for governor in Michigan back in the day.
Yep. Before he's brainwashed.
I was quoting him the other day. I think he's given a lot of credit to his dad for that old line about if not us, then who? If not now, then when? And when he was talking about a tax increase in Michigan, you Google that, and that comes up as it's a literary quote, but it gets attributed to his dad. Mm-hmm. The long line of public service can withstand the presidential beatdown, which he now is receiving, and it won't matter to him.
I don't even think he's in any jeopardy in his Senate seat. And he's, as you said, one of the few in the Senate who would simply rise above. And in terms of the sweep of history, he comes out looking very, very good.
Right. And he will work with the president on most of his agenda, tax agenda, economic agenda. This isn't going to prevent him. He's not going to become – the problem that Flake got into was it dominated his entire discussion.
Well, and Flake correctly assessed, I think, that he was not renominatable in the state of Arizona for having taken on Trump. Romney does not have that problem.
Right. But Romney will get back on script with the Republican script on confirming federal judges. He's going to be there on that. He'll be there with Mitch McConnell on 90% of these votes. He's there on economic policy. He's there on tariff policy. I think, I think a majority of the American electorate, vast majority, felt that this was wrong, what he did. It was an abuse of power. The split line on that comes down to those that believe it was an offense which you would remove a sitting president from office in an election year versus those who did believe it.
I think that was – I don't know they really believed that at the end. It was like, well, the facts got to be kind of hard to dispute, and politically I can't take this guy on, so it's about the only thing I can say.
Yeah, well, but I think it's the thing a lot of people believe, too. Mm-hmm. I think the fault line is, do you remove him for this offense? Yeah. Or because I don't think there was a large question that he committed it.
They tried to maintain it, but it got pretty fanciful at the end.
Right.
They had the they had the smoking gun almost from the get-go.
Right,
on
but
this.
But is that an abuse of authority? Even though the aide went through, we don't want to. I don't want to relitigate the rationalities of politics because we all rationalize our behaviors. I mean, we all do that. We all, one way or another, excuse our own shortcomings and say in some way, well, that's OBK because of this.
And obviously there's something funny here when, save Mitt Romney, everybody looks at the same fact. And every single Democrat concludes that this is beyond the pale of acceptable. And every single Republican concludes that, no, it isn't.
Well, I mean, we had the cinema vote, which was also closely watched. Because I think people thought, they saw our State of the Union speech, which we'll talk about, standing up and getting a lot of attention versus in purple versus the in white crowd, distinguished at least three times, got up and applauded the president and initiatives that she has been involved in. But, at the end of the day, I believe it's a political vote on her side, too, because she's not going to give Martha McSally an excuse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that becomes this political whether she believed it or not. She can all say that on her own. I'm going to say she's not going to give any cover and aid and comfort to the enemy. Mm-hmm. And that would have a vote to acquit on one or both charges as would have compromised.
Absolutely
the position.
Given Martha McSally all the cover in the world.
And that helps her versus Mark Kelly. And the Democrats aren't
would have been pointed out to her in caucus.
I'm confident there she probably wasn't even needed to be pointed out. She's a smart lady with a lot of smart people around her that said, yeah, we might want to calculate this. Yeah. So, but it's all the calculus of all these decisions that go into this.
So when all is said and done, we have gone through this whole elaborate thing of the impeachment of the president of the United States. He's running for reelect. Do you think this has any impact?
I think the enduring narrative that both sides will believe are two things. One, on the Republican side, look, they've been trying to do this for 4 years, and this was the culmination, or 3 years. This is the culmination of that effort. This is all they have to offer. It's just opprobrium and outrage at the president, and they refuse to work with us on any policy initiatives. That'll be the right wing, the conservative narrative. The left is that he's an unacceptable human being to be the president of the United States. He's not. He is beyond unquestionably immoral. He is not acceptable to the American electorate and who we are as a people.
I agree with you on both counts, but I think both of those were well set in place before this
impeachment trial started.
I think that's a long answer that says, no, there's no change.
No, right. I don't think there's any change. It probably dug the trench line on both sides a little deeper. But I think I do believe that the American electorate's smart enough to discern that I'm fond of saying that politics is a team sport, and this is the ultimate team game, and the president understands that. He's rallying his team. And so that we saw that in the State of the Union speech on Monday night.
And we will get to that next when we return in just a moment. By the way, your reference to the Romney family legacy reminded me in 2012, I wrote a Huffington Post article, the title of which was "I Like Romney."
Right.
The punchline was, by the time you got to the end of the article, it was George Romney.
Yes, George Romney.
We'll be back in the Think Tank. Moving on to State of the Union. Nothing to talk about here.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we've moved on from impeachment. Hopefully the country can do the same. State of the Union, also this week. Chuck Coughlin here with me. I propose a deal. Let us not mention either the rebuffed handshake nor the ripped up. we could obsess about that. Obviously, no love lost there.
But it's theater,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and the president understands theater.
Yeah.
He is, I'd call him a theater major. I mean, because he understands reality TV and perception. He is a great marketing major.
You think that was all? I think there was some personal animus there, too.
Oh, it's there like, was. You know. But, you know, if you watched, because I was watching, yeah. I mean, we're all watching, when he walked up to the podium and he hands Mike the speech, Vice President Pence the speech, didn't shake Mike's hand, handed it to her, just turned around, knowing full well that she probably was going to extend her hand, and he just turned his back.
Yeah.
He knew. I mean, he knew. There's nothing unscripted about.
Well, and they had pictures behind her back. She had pre-ripped the corners of the speech during that. You know, in other words, she was intending to do that at the end.
My as a staffer for elected officials, my thought was afterwards. I'm like, okay, you know, this is going to be brutal if you're staffing Pelosi or the Democrats. So how do we manage this? What do we do? Because this is going to be brutal. We're going to sit there and we're going to hate every minute of the castor oil this guy's pouring down our throats.
And we're going to have to maintain decorum.
And she, to her credit, when a couple times when we saw that the gallery exploded, she admonished the gallery, but, you know, failed to control herself at the end.
Well,
you know, but so what do? You know, you read along, you tell them to read along with the speech, you know, when you're there. But do you have a war room? Do you have a war room that, you know, when the speech gets delivered, you immediately go and create, do to the president what he's doing to you? Do a Twitter room.
Mm-hmm.
Do a Twitter room. Do a
fact check.
Do live. Live. So while he's giving the speech, wait for this one to come.
Yeah.
You know, this is a lie. This is not true. You know, do you just really execute with a massive amount of discipline, which they could do. They got smart people. Mm-hmm. But they sat there and they sat on their hands. They looked bad. It looked like, you know, I had some people up in the audience that told me this. There were junior Republican members of the House taunting the Democrats, literally screaming at them when they were cheering, going, "What? You don't support African American wage increases? You know what? You can't stand up for the greatest economy in the history of America?" You know, they were taunting them on the floor, and it was a miserable experience. So, okay, you know that, what do you do?
Look at what the whole. If you look at the speech to analyze it, you had two or three components. Number one, you had the campaign commercial. You know, which is part of what is normally done in the state. These are all the great accomplishments that I have done. That's part and parcel of it. The second part you had, which I thought was taken to a little bit excess in terms of the numbers, was ever since Ronald Reagan.
The
Lenny Scott. We were pointing out all the heroes in the in the gallery.
Yep.
And normally you pick out people that everybody has to clap for. There was an exception this time. Rush Limbaugh, he did not fit that mold. He has been a divisive figure. And not only to point him out, but Presidential Medal of Freedom, the mold
gasp,
on that.
Yeah. The gasps that were taking place in the chamber when that happened, you know, I had people, you know, people who aren't, you know, have other pastimes in their life than we do, watching this kind of like, is that normal? You know, I'm like,
that's unprecedented.
Extraordinarily unprecedented.
If you look at the kind of people who
get the president,
they are never controversial. Some of them had previously, you know, a Martin Luther King or something.
Yeah.
May have been controversial at the time, but he was not controversial by the time he got the medal.
Yeah, well, he's suffering now from Mike. We got to be sensitive here. He's suffering from stage 4 lung cancer. You know, so you know, there's
that
this
made him obviously
moment.
A little bit of a sympathetic
a
aspect,
little bit, but he is he is a viper to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. He's been a shock jock radio talk show host that has made his bread and butter. Mm-hmm. thrashing the Democrats
yeah.
and a lot of Republicans yeah. for a long time.
And often in very crude fashion.
Yeah.
You know?
With the exception, I mean, my thought was, is because there was a lot of those moments, you know, as if I was writing a musical score underneath the president's speech, you know, when he's talking, you have soft French horns playing, you know, and it's this call to battle in arms and the great American comeback story. And every time he, you know, makes the Tuskegee Airmen or the border security
all those
guard,
were of the of the
you got
of,
soft yeah. violin music yeah. playing.
But that was of the you script. Know. That's nor he did, I think, more of those. I don't know if anybody counted them. I don't recall that many of them.
No,
in
the
past.
Little girl that's he's yeah. giving a scholarship to go to a school.
Yeah.
And then he calls
sure
them government schools.
And most of them were black, you know, made
oh,
up,
yeah.
up front.
No,
you know,
it you know. Was like it was extraordinary political theater,
yeah.
you know, that you know, I guess we'd maybe have seen it in the times of Jefferson and Adams
but
back in the day.
The thing that you
something.
Didn't get here that has been part and parcel of almost every State of the Union, I saw almost complete absence of a policy proposal. We got the commercial, we got the patriotic, you know, warm and fuzzy acknowledgments, but no
well, the,
policy
the close,
proposals.
The closest he got when the Democrats started shouting at him was on Medicaid on coverage for all,
yeah,
you know, for
which he's
pre-existing
fought
conditions,
against.
which he has a federal lawsuit to undercut right,
right
now,
right.
And yet the Democrats have a proposal. I think it's HR3.
Right, they were shouting that
3-3-3,
yes, right, yeah.
And he's running the Republican proposal.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was
about it.
That was particularly audacious.
That was his depth of the policy.
But he knew that he had the microphone, and they didn't.
Well, that's the thing about people need to understand. It's a caucus of one, and the caucus of one is much easier to manage than a caucus, a Democratic caucus or a
you know, even the speech after, which was a decent. I mean,
she did a great job. Yeah, Governor Michigan.
But you're outgunned when you're up against the president with the full Congress, even though half of them just voted to impeach you. That's not a fair fight.
No,
the
no.
president. If
you
the
got,
president can't win that one,
10 minutes. He's got an hour, and he's got
and,
all a, these,
and he has all the aura of you.
Yes.
So, and how many people have been watching?
It was the beginning of the 2020 presidential cycle.
We will be back with Chuck Coughlin discussing the rest of the presidential campaign in a moment in thinking.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Oh, wow. Back here with Chuck Coughlin. Pretty interesting week when the first actual vote for President of the United States in the 2020 cycle is topic number 3 of the week.
Yeah, like we were talking, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to hear it, did it make any noise?
Well,
nobody even saw it, so it never happened. I mean, it was like the technological foible here victimized. I mean,
we saw one of the we saw Maricopa County level vote screw up counting.
Yeah, I mean, just a disaster for the Democrats to the narrative going into Monday. You know, there was not an alternative narrative to the, you know, if it had been, it'd been okay, we got like a virtual tie in Iowa, but the surprise would have been two things would have been clear. Buttigieg would have gotten a bounce from people looking at him going, really, that guy won Iowa. And then the other narrative, which was potentially a saving grace, is the disaster that this was for the Biden campaign that doubled down in the last month trying to pull this off and didn't even come close.
Yep. So, I mean, just extraordinary. And, you know, egg on our face because Mayor Pete was the guy that we discounted way back, if you remember the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we can't pronounce his name, but it doesn't matter. He's going nowhere.
But he's been making strides, and there's reasons for that. I think, you know, electorally, he's the closest thing in the presidential cycle to what you would call a Kyrsten Sinema type vote candidate who is not adhering as strictly to the Democratic mantra as they would like, as the party activists like, but he's got his own thing going on. He's got his own brand of independence and thoughtfulness. You know, speaks 5 languages, has a deep understanding of the Bible, can really speak to those issues. more than any other candidate on the trail, and has a business background as well. And so, you know, he's young. I mean, he is super young.
But the more he talks, the more you forget that.
Yeah,
he looks young.
Yeah.
But the more he talks, the more you're impressed. This is a sharp guy.
Yeah.
And, of course, the other thing about that is there's two lanes in this. And you got the Bernie Warren lane of the left of the – and he is in the centrist lane. So his – The problem or the advantage that Joe Biden had was he seemed to co-opt the alternative that is seriously in question.
Alternative is seriously the news ought to be. Yeah. The Biden lane, the more pragmatic lane, which is truthfully their only path to victory. I mean, in my opinion, I know progressives hate to hear it, but. You know, Bernie is not a guy. Bernie is a reflection in the Hamilton plays. Every action deserves an opposite reaction. Bernie's the reaction to Trump, and he's incapable of compromise. He's an ideologue. You love him or hate him. I mean, I understand. As are his supporters.
More of whom I am convinced will sit on their hands. If he doesn't get the nomination, then is true for any other candidate, including Elizabeth Warren.
Well, as you were saying, previously, and feel vindicated for that, because they're as righteous as the Republican right is righteous. They are as righteous as they are. That there is no way other than my way. I am right. Everybody else is wrong, and this is what it's going to be. So here's the interesting thing. It is to me is so acknowledging that Biden is the legs are getting swept out from under him. It appears to me if nothing changes, that this primary cycle, you got Mayor Mike, so Bloomberg now comes into play on Super Tuesday.
The only way in which this was not. I was not perfect for him was that Mayor Pete's in there too.
Right.
And is now a formidable
foil for
Mayor Mike.
If you take Warren, you sort of break up the ideology. Yep. You take Warren and Sanders, that's the progressive part. And then you take Klobuchar and Pete and Biden, that's the more, moderate, centrist, pragmatic part.
Yep.
And then can Mike pull that together? Are we going to defy Will Rogers? Or is the Democratic Party going to defy Will Rogers' ancient wisdom that I'm not a member of an organized party, I'm a Democrat? If the Democrats want to win—
I thought that was Harry Truman. No?
It was Will Rogers.
Will Rogers.
Yeah. I said if the Democrats want to win, they're going to have a smoky room conversation amongst those representing that mainstream part of the vote, and the progressives are going to have their conversation.
Progressives are having their conversation in the voting booth. There's that lane out. The thing that I would point out about this is that the voters in New Hampshire just really seem to relish upsetting the apple cart after Iowa.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the truth of Iowa gets completely thrown into disarray.
Right. Well, the favorite is never wins Iowa, right? And then somebody dark horse comes out of New Hampshire.
I mean, it is not beyond the realm of possibility that Joe Biden has a resurgence in New Hampshire. So, I don't see the signs of it.
No, but, I don't see it either. Yeah. His next way station where he probably will do well is in South Carolina. But
his problem there is he will have been battered in three.
Right.
Three losses in a row.
He's got Vegas and South Carolina before Super Tuesday. Yeah. Super Tuesday takes place. I still think it's a muddy mess.
Yeah.
And this looks like it could go on until April, until like New York, when New York votes in April. And does this, I'll throw it out here. Does this create an opportunity for a brokered convention where people get together and figure out, look, the president's approval numbers, if he can restrain his tweets and restrain, he'll probably creep up above 50% for the first time in a long time, given the strength of the economy. And if he behaves, well, which 50, is a huge 50% doubt.
50% would be unbeatable. He is right now in the average. He's 43, which is his high point. He's been 38 to 43. He's at the audit right after impeachment, all of that. He is at his actual high point.
But so does his surge, which he's going to get a post State of the Union surge. He's got no, you know, he's having a rally this, you know, he had a rally last week, you know, with all the members of Congress calling them all out, you know. He's got his, you know, his bro team is ready to go. And so do they say, is my righteousness in being right, a.k.a. the Bernie Sanders, Warren constituency, so enamored of their position that they're going to guarantee this president another election? Or do they get together and figure this one out?
How do you, given that you've got primaries out there, how do you get together and do that? You get people
well, it's
to actually
gonna keep dragging,
quit and endorse?
Quit and endorse and dedicate, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, does Klobuchar would be the first, right?
She would be the obvious one because I can't see her going. The fifth place in Iowa is.
So does Mike go to Amy and say, you're my ticket, me and you?
He could.
Me and
could.
You. So it's me and you. And then, you know, Biden knows he's not succeeding. That he's not got traction either.
Yeah.
So does then Biden, and then does the president roll out? Does Obama roll out? Because we know there's
that
not
would be,
a
that would be extreme.
Right. That
if,
would
if
be
the
extreme.
President got involved with that.
But I'm not
the rest of them. I could see.
Right. But you got to think down the road in terms of the back room here. What that's going to look
well,
like.
Well, maybe that back room, you know, the more, you know who might be better than Amy on that might be Elizabeth Warren.
Maybe, but you get that could be, but she.
Bloomberg Warren?
But does she exit early enough to capitalize on that momentum? I say no, because her righteousness will keep her in the race.
Well.
You know, I think it's going to be fascinating.
I don't think she's righteous at the level of Bernie.
Everybody this last Tuesday after the speech was, man, he's going to get reelected. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the economy's blowing. He's got this great American comeback story. Yep. And what do we got? We got this. We're angry and we don't like him. And we don't think he represents American values. But what's your narrative? And
I think they got to move off.
Bloomberg's got a narrative
The narrative has got to be
off of him.
This economy is not working for everybody.
Well, and you know, we're trading with dictatorial regimes. We're trading with regimes that do not represent American values. We're creating economic prosperity. We used to use our markets to promote democracy and to promote behavior. That we wanted. We wanted to reward good behavior. That got thrown out the window a long time ago. And so now do we reanimate that discussion and talk about China, what we expect from China, Hong Kong, the Hong Kong issue, Taiwan.
Where were you speaking out on these issues?
Right. And Russia and Putin's extent of control in Crimea and the continued onslaught with Ukraine, Middle East issues. You know, there is really not a realistic peace proposal that the president threw out. It was a one-sided gambit. You know,
it was getting Netanyahu reelected,
right? But do you agree with the president that pushing back on this Iranian regime that's been an exporter of terrorism? But you know, there's a way to do that with an international coalition. It doesn't need to be just us.
You know, I listen to all that and I say, when have people ever voted on foreign policy that wasn't based on where we had troops actually fighting?
Yeah. Bob Robb made that argument the other day. He goes, what is this peace process? What is the American interest here in this? It's like, what is our inherent interest and why are we involved? And as we've learned in most places in the world, we do better as a coalition. We do better with European coalition, with other democracies, in advocating for – there's a reason we do that.
We'll pick that up. I'm hearing that's a really good basis for sound foreign policy, but I don't know – and you can answer that when we get back – how you motivate people to vote on that basis. I don't recall when
American
that was
flag.
Ever done.
It's how we won World War II.
All right. We'll be back with Chuck Coughlin in the think tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with Chuck Coughlin. We're talking in this segment presidential politics. A very specific question for you, Chuck.
Yes,
obviously,
sir.
Joe Biden was seriously injured in Iowa. Is it death row or does he have a comeback alternative?
I don't think it's there. I mean, he'll struggle along. If there is any narrative there, it's a long, arduous struggle through to the convention where he becomes an unenthusiastic, nominee from the party.
Iowa pierced his inevitability. His biggest argument for election is, I'm the one who can beat Trump.
Well,
that's kind of hard to maintain now.
They clearly were not making Iowa a priority early on. He said that he wasn't a priority. And then in the last month of the campaign, they spent the bank. They went there to say, no, we're now going to try and make a run at this. I didn't understand that.
And his pockets aren't as deep as some others. I mean, Sanders got $25 million
in January. They shifted strategy, knowing they weren't going to win Iowa, knowing they weren't going to win New Hampshire, into Super Tuesday. The only thing that has changed in that time frame, and I don't know this, I'm just watching, is Bloomberg. Bloomberg is now in Super Tuesday. He's in the Super Tuesday condo.
In a big way.
In a big way.
Spending.
So they were thinking they'd get to South Carolina, that they'd make a move, and they'd resurge themselves prior to Super Tuesday, and then Super Tuesday would validate that Biden is the inevitable candidate. I don't think we see that anymore with Mike's candidacy.
Now, then that South Carolina, I think, becomes very interesting in that he had the lion's share of the black vote, which is itself 60% of the South Carolina Democratic primary. I think this is a very pragmatic electorate. Is Joe Biden all that solid even in South Carolina if he doesn't look inevitable?
Firefighters and labor are probably looking around going, okay, and they're probably having a conversation with Biden about that right now. What are we doing? Where are we going to go? How do we make sure that our seat at the table is not Bernie or Elizabeth? Those are not good options for them.
Then it looks like there's two other choices, and they're both mayors.
Yeah. Right. And so, I just think there's a giant calculus that's going to have to go on here in the face of of the State of the Union speech and his recitation and his narrative. I mean, again, back to him. Like him or hate him, he's a masterful marketer. Mm-hmm. And he had Make America Great Again, came with that. Now it's the great American comeback story. And look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me.
And the economy is doing great.
Well, because of me.
That's because of me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, everything I've
only
done.
Only I could have done this.
He said that at the Republican convention. He goes, only I can do it. I mean, mm-hmm. It's unbelievable.
And people kind of look at he's a little full of himself, but the economy in general is pretty good.
But the left's narrative is to vilify him, so that even props
and
him
even,
up a little
and
bit
and
more.
And even some things that are true but don't matter as much, for example, that most of that economy is merely following through on the Obama trajectory, which was already there. It's more or less a straight line. In fact, most of the measures you compare the growth Obama versus Trump, the Obama was a little higher.
We go back to Clinton, right? Bill Clinton running against Bush, first Bush, HW. It's the economy, stupid. Mm-hmm. Carville's line that called Bush out. We can hear Trump saying that.
Sure.
It's the economy. You guys don't like anything. You wouldn't even stand up for, there'd be ads with what was going on. Nancy will be in an ad, ripping up American prosperity, you know.
Which is why I think they probably strategically have to let go of the whole impeachment business. Just say, all right, we did that. We still believe, but it's over. We got to talk about policy.
I thought it was a mistake from the get-go to do. And they doubled down and went there, and now it is where they are. So, hey, there is a reason, right? It's only God knows the reason at the end of the day that things happen for the way they do. And so something will evolve of this. I cannot see with the angst that is within the Democratic Party and a significant segment of the electorate, both moderate Republican women and independents, PNDs, and the visceral dislike of this guy, that they're not going to figure out a way that they can address the electorate in a winning manner. It's something that's going to evolve over the next between now and the time the convention happens, probably end of Super Tuesday and before April. Between March and April, I got to think.
You think there's a deal to be cut somewhere?
They have to. Yeah. They have to. Otherwise, it's rest in peace. And the woke culture.
Smacks of a deal that Bernie people are going to go ballistic.
Well, they're going to have to be part of it. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to be part of it if they're willing to have. Is your hatred of him and your dislike mm-hmm. of him override your righteousness? Yeah. Or are you satisfied, as you mentioned earlier, being part of the woke culture who's just going to be upset for the next 4 years?
That was off air. But
yes,
yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned it. He goes, the people who will be two constituencies that will be super happy with the president, with the Trump nominee, the Trump constituency obviously will feel validated and true. And to a degree, the woke progressive culture will
get to feel morally superior.
Yes, morally superior. And I told you the country was wrong and I told you you're wrong. And, you know, I'm just going to be outraged for the next 4 years. If the Democrats want to be relevant, they're going to have to do something about that. Yeah. I mean, they have a track record here in Arizona of doing that.
Interesting scenario you present. You're essentially suggesting the Democrats got to go back in the old FDR-style back room to pull this one off.
Well, pull it off, but they also have a plan. They also have a path, a demonstrable path in Arizona, through what Kyrsten Sinema did, and they have a high-profile Senate race in Arizona.
That's looking very good for the Democrats.
Well, but that's why Trump will be here a lot. So they'll have a test package of how do we win the nomination? How do we win Arizona? How does Mark Kelly win? Because I do know. I mean, there were two or three references, two groups in the State of the Union speech from Arizona, the Tuskegee gentleman and his son, and the Mueller family.
Yeah,
that's not the last we've seen of that. That's coming back. That will happen. He will be out here because he does know, given the vote in the Senate, that hey, if they didn't impeach a first term president, I don't know. You know, we know second term presidents aren't nearly as possible. That Senate seat's incredibly important.
Yeah. Well, in fact, if you do the arithmetic, there's about four toss up states that if the Democrats were able to run the table on them. I think they're going to lose in Alabama, pick up one. The Senate's in play. So the Senate is particularly in play if the presidency
is
in play.
But watch the narrative that was launched by the lady in the purple dress. Kyrsten Sinema, last cycle out here. That's the path that they need
Kyrsten
to follow.
That's Kyrsten Sinema you're referring to, but we're out of time. That's another show. Next week, show 300 in the think tank, we have a very special guest. A genuine certified rock star will join the think tank. Next week.
The morning lights, the streets that lead them, and sirens call them on.